is Saturday, May 27th, and Ryan Jarrell and Brian Stackpole are back for another episode of The Main Event. Today is episode 55, and we have the Mangler back on the show, the CES Featherweight Champion of the World, Matt Bassette, is back talking to us. After fairly recently, he defended his belt for a record time for the CES promotion, so we'll talk to him about all of that. Also on the program today, we have UFC welterweight Zach Otto, who will be fighting next June 10th at the Vector Arena in New Zealand when he takes on Keiichi Kunimoto at UFC Fight Night 110. So another jam-packed show, Brian.
Yeah, love it. It's good to be back here, too. We've just unveiled the curtain a little bit. We recorded a whole bunch of shows a couple of weeks back, so it's nice to be here and doing it a little bit more regularly as opposed to taking a little sabbatical, but it was a nice time. It was enjoyable.
You know, it's nice when we come in here and we put a full day's work in and we bang out like three or four shows. A
lot of banging.
Yeah, a lot of banging. It was just nonstop banging. I was exhausted by the end of the
day. So parched and dehydrated.
Yeah. But, you know, it's good when you get that done and you're able to take some time off because we're human, Brian. We're just like anybody else. We need some time off as well.
We bleed.
That's
we
right.
Can be killed, just to sort of misquote the Predator movie. Yeah, but of course, it was nice to take a little time off. I'm still exhausted, though. I need this Memorial Day weekend could not have come at a more opportune time because, man, on Thursday night into Friday, I fell asleep, not even Thursday night, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and fell asleep all through until 4 in the morning. It was ridiculous.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how much exhaustion I had built up and hadn't been able to sleep until then. So I'm just happy to enjoy this weekend. Maybe there'll be some sunny times and sunny temps because it looks awful out there today.
Yeah, it doesn't look very good. I was looking at the extended forecast, and it does look nice come Sunday and Monday, Tuesday. So
oh, nice.
Hopefully we get some nice weather for this long weekend.
Yeah, but a lot of stuff still to talk about in the UFC Bellator promotions and moving forward. And again, just a disclaimer, too. So because we taped some of this stuff, things have changed in between when we had taped things and then when everything came to air. Luckily, the last UFC pay-per-view, pretty much as per usual, we only missed one fight that we had talked about the week prior to that with Pettis and Cejudo not going down. But other than that, that was a pretty good card too. But a lot of stuff on the forefront now coming to light. And where do you want to start with the UFC news coming up?
Well, I think the biggest news that's really interesting to me is going to be the middleweight interim belt. This is all because Michael Bisping is on the shelf. He's injured for a little while, so he's not going to be able to defend his belt. So they're making an interim matchup between Yoel Romero and Robert Whittaker, which I love both of these guys. Obviously, Romero seems like he would have gotten the next shot anyways.
Right.
He was next in line. Whittaker, however, has jumped a few spots, and he's ruffled some feathers in the middleweight division, most of which Gegard Mousasi. I was listening to an interview with him the other day. It was actually Michael Bisping was interviewing him on Fox Sports 1, and it was a pretty comical back and forth. But I understand his problem with Whittaker being able to jump him essentially in the rankings and get this shot. But it's a really interesting stylistic matchup. Obviously, Romero with his wrestling and grappling background, I mean, the guy's a freak of nature. Just looking at him, is he doesn't look like a normal human being. And Robert Whittaker is an elite striker. So it's a really interesting matchup. I think Whittaker has a legit shot here. Obviously, Romero has such a unbelievable pedigree in the clinch, and if he gets on top of you, it's like having a grizzly bear on top of you. But that's where I think the most interesting news is. I think the winner of that fight, I don't think Michael Bisping. People want to crap on him a little bit and say that.
On him, yeah.
You know, I think he's done some great things, but if you look at some of his you know, title defenses and some of the wins that he's got, I mean, he barely got by Anderson Silva. He barely got by Dan Henderson the second time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, those guys aren't even in the top six or seven of the division, really. I mean, the Spider has fallen back significantly over the last couple of years since Wyvern basically took his soul. And, you know, so this is just a really interesting matchup, and I think you're going to see the middleweight division start to be shaken up a little bit once Bisping does get back in there and loses to whoever he faces next.
I will say, I like Yoel Romero. I think he wins this, though Whittaker's really impressed me, specifically his last fight, and he was just an absolute monster, and one of the reasons why he's now the third-ranked middleweight in the UFC right now. I know Luke Rockhold's in the mix, too, but he did lose his shot, and I think deservedly so. Though if he could go out there and beat a Musasi, then maybe that would vault him into the discussion next time. Georges St-Pierre is going to have a lot more difficult time against either a Whittaker or a Yoel Romero than he would against Michael Bisping. And that's no knock on Bisping. I just don't think he's as good of a champion as either of those two guys with the interim strap. But with that said, I'm still not a believer that we see GSP fight in 2017, which seems like a long shot at this point. And I'm still not a believer we'll see him in early 2018 fighting in the UFC. Because he has postponed it. When was the announcement made that he was coming back to the UFC? Like early this year?
Yeah, I think it was like around early March.
But there have been rumblings for years, and if he was thinking about coming back to the Ultimate Fighting Championship, wouldn't you be in more fight shape?
Well, I think he is in fight shape. If you just look at him, he's more muscular now than he was when he was even competing. That's why the whole thought of fighting at 185 seemed to make more sense for him, because the cut to 170 after so many years off would be even harder.
But why didn't he schedule a fight earlier?
Well, it wasn't
the Bisping injury. The Bisping injury is something that's a little bit newer.
So if you look at guys like GSP and Conor McGregor, guys that have made it to the pinnacle of the sport, you know, their egos are also at the pinnacle of the sport. They are meticulous about every little thing that they do. And I think as far as George goes, because he's so in tune with his body and how long he's taken off and how the world views him as in history, when it's all said and done, he's going to be one of the best ever to do it. I just think that he's not going to step back in until he knows 100% that he's completely ready, not just physically, but also mentally. And when you take so much time off from the fight game, it's going to mess with you a little bit mentally, because it's scary jumping in there no matter who you are.
Then why announce this? Why say I'm coming back to the UFC until you know you're ready to come back to the UFC and have a fight camp ready 3 months later?
Well, the eye injury, who knows how bad that really was? You know, that eye injury could be worse than he's letting on. And if it's significant enough, then that could push things. But you know, I my love for George.
I think you're seeing it in George St. Pierre colored glasses.
But also, I don't necessarily know that you're really giving George the credit that he deserves.
No,
because
I'll give him the credit, but the problem is that I just don't think he's going to be fighting here before the end of the year. And we're talking about seven full months of time that I'm quite sure that we're not going to see him.
But that's just your opinion. I mean, that, you know, there are other people that think.
But again, the title fight's going to be in what, July? The interim title fight
for the middleweight belt.
Yeah.
That is actually, let's see, I have it pulled up here.
Yeah, I think it's
going
to be
July 8th, UFC 213.
Yeah, international fight week. So you got to give those fighters some time to recoup, and again, 3 months probably at minimum on that one. So you might be looking at September, and then who knows? Sometimes, like Stipe, only fought twice. Mm-hmm. Twice. He usually averages two fights a year.
Are you saying that George would fight the winner of the middleweight? Is that where you're going with
that? Isn't that what's going to go down?
No. Dana White came out and said that George will now, his next fight will be for the welterweight championship.
Oh, for the welterweight.
He's going back down.
Then I'm perfectly fine with that. Yeah. That one's good. I thought he was going to face whoever won that one, and then Bisping would get the next winner that one.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree with you. I agree
with
you,
too. And that's how it should have been anyways.
Right, because exactly. You know, and again, that is completely true, and I believe wholeheartedly that it was unfair that he was able to jump the line of all these unbelievable middleweights when he's never even fought at middleweight. This guy is the best welterweight of all time. So have him come back, fight in the welterweight division. That makes a hell of a lot more sense. I would much rather see GSP fight Tyron Woodley than Yoel Romero. I've said this time and time again, there is a reason for weight classes, and Yoel Romero is a scary dude. So for George St. Pierre to step in, never to have fought at middleweight, and to fight a guy of Yoel Romero's ilk, that is a tall task to ask of the Canadian. But it's a really interesting thing to look at, and you know, the UFC, again, this just gives us more stuff to talk about. We're in a good position right now as we move forward to things in the summer, and it's going to be a lot of exciting fights for us to break down.
And another thing I'd want to talk about too, as you mentioned some exciting things to break down here in the future in the UFC, is one of your favorite and my favorites as well, Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
And some news coming out over the last couple of days and weeks, too, since we've done our last recording, that he might actually have a title match against someone that we didn't think would be possible. We thought maybe he'd be fighting still another 125er who might be deserving of a title shot. But instead, because Cody Garbrandt, no love, having no chance to fight in International Fight Week, they're now discussing maybe having Mighty Mouse fight for the title against TJ Dillashaw near his hometown up in upstate Washington.
Yeah, I mean, can TJ make that weight? I mean, he's going to have to really stay pretty disciplined in order to cut an extra 10 pounds because he's not a very big guy to begin with anyways, and that could potentially affect his strength going into that fight. I would like to see them fight at maybe a catch weight, I mean, or if they just fought at 135 and just make it like a super fight, maybe not necessarily for the belt. But either way, I'm all on board. I think this fight makes complete sense because it's going to get people's eyes on this fight because DJ has been running through everyone in the 125-pound division. So who else is there for him to fight? Quite frankly, there isn't really anybody left there. I know that there's talks about Ray Borg getting a shot at 125, but right now, this makes sense to me. Why not have Demetrius come up or fight someone from the 135-pound weight class, someone that's naturally a little bit bigger, someone that can test him and give him a little bit more of a fight.
But to take it from the Mighty Mouse perspective, why would you move up to 135 for no reason?
Well,
At this point, when you're one fight away from breaking the UFC title defense record...
No, that's true.
I would do that at least first.
I think he definitely wants to break the record, but I think you will see him eventually move up to 135.
Yeah, of course.
He's cleaned out 125.
It's
There's nothing less for him. Once he breaks the record, go up and test yourself. And if he goes and he wins the 135-pound strap and defends that a few times, I mean, you're talking about him maybe being the greatest ever if you really think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't see why he would move up to 135. I can see why TJ would move down to 125 to try to take the belt because there's a built-in title shot for him and there's a built-in chance for him to make some money. There's a built-in chance right there to make DJ look a little bit more appetizing to the casual UFC fan because honestly, he just goes through all his opponents and it's just a train wreck of just barrage of Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson just destroying... Yeah. The division. So it would be nice to get some fresh blood in there. Again, if I'm... I would love to see Dom Cruz in this situation as opposed to TJ. Just because you'd have that backdrop of...
Right, he's the last one to beat him.
Last guy to beat him.
Yeah.
And plus, he could go down there, and I think it would just be a more... I don't know. It would at least give some credence to why he was getting a 125 title shot. Because I do understand why Mighty Mouse is saying he hasn't beaten anyone at the flyweight. Why is he now getting a title shot just because he was going to get a 135 shot?
Didn't Cruz just hurt himself again?
Yeah, that's one of the things that kind of ruined my little scenario, my dream situation here, but that would be one of the reasons why at least you could maybe make it work a little bit better than TJ, but Cody, love him to death, but jeez, it's so disappointing to see your premier fight for what, like the third time in a row that they've had this big time premier card go by the wayside because of injuries and whatnot.
Yeah, it's really too bad. I don't know if you've been watching too much of this season of The Ultimate Fighter, but it's pretty comical. And I'll tell you what, the cast of the show is awesome. And because it's called Redemption, there are all these guys that have either won the season or have made it to the UFC and done all right and then fizzled out, and now they're back. This is their redemption to get back in the UFC. And the hatred that is so clear between Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw and Uriah Faber for that matter. It is great TV to watch. These guys hate one another and they're nonstop. They're like a bunch of high school bickering girls back and forth. It's hysterical to watch.
And another reason why it's sad we're not going to get to see that fight in July.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
I know, because that would have been the culmination of an awesome season, watching it, watching you get excited, getting ready to watch these two get in the cage. Because, you know, there were all these rumors, and Cody says he has the tape. He's like, don't make me release the tape, bro. I will, you know, but that's like, that's kind of like MMA 101. Like, I'm not going to do that because training, he apparently knocked TJ out in training.
Oh, really?
And there's a tape for it. And TJ kind of blew it off and was like, oh, well, yeah, this and that. But so the back and forth has been really interesting. Eventually, these guys will fight. Hopefully, it's by the end of the year.
Here's my question, though. If in August they do have a 125 title fight between Mighty Mouse and TJ loses and doesn't look great in fashion, like it's a five-round battle, but Mighty Mouse wins it quite handily. Mm-hmm. Do you think TJ gets the 135 shot afterwards? Or does he now have to go back behind some of the other guys he was contending with? Does Dom Cruz get the next shot? Yeah. Do you look at a guy like Lineker and say maybe he gets a shot or somebody else?
Yeah, I mean, TJ's already had the belt, and he's fought for the belt again after he lost it and whatnot. So I think that if he does go down and loses to Mighty Mouse, mm-hmm. I mean, who hasn't lost a Mighty Mouse?
Well, yeah, but you know, it's still a loss.
But it's still a loss, but you're always one big win away from getting right back in the picture.
It's true.
So,
it's true.
You know, I think regardless of what TJ does, he's not going anywhere. He's going to be one of those guys right in that nucleus there, that 3-4 guys
right.
in the 35-pound weight class that is going to be getting a title shot with a big win, even after a big loss. So I'm not worried about it for him.
And finally, two last notes. Big Country Roy Nelson's going to Bellator, yeah. which I think is great. Not that USC doesn't treat their fighters right because their paydays are a little bit bigger, I would say, on average. But he can get some sponsorship money in tow, which is nice. And he gets to go in front of a different audience. Yeah. And he gets to pick out things a little differently. And that's why I think Bellator is good for the business.
Absolutely. And good for Big Country. I'll tell you something. I was listening to UFC Tonight the other day on the radio, actually, on Sirius Satellite. I love that.
Absolutely.
Being able to listen to that when you're driving your car, it makes me feel all warm and tingly inside. Only when I'm not listening to the main event show.
Oh, of course.
Right,
yeah.
But so I was listening to Gegard Mousasi talking about what he gets paid. He hasn't re-signed yet with the UFC because he's furious about what he gets paid.
Yep.
Do you realize that, I just blanked right now his name, the 19th, Sage Northcutt,
yep.
okay?
Oh, he gets a ton of money,
75 and 75 per fight.
Jeez.
That trumps what Gegard makes significantly. And he's so I agree. I was listening to him, and I was like, holy crap, I totally agree with what you're saying. This is a guy that is a proven, crying out loud, he's a legend in the sport of MMA. Gegard Mousasi's been around forever, doing it forever, and he's still right there in the top five of his division. And Sage Northcutt is making more than him? That's ridiculous.
I got to pull it up. Ariel Helwani had a great tweet the other day about the payouts for this Stockholm fight up in Sweden. And Alexander Gustafsson is the main event, or at least the co. I'm trying to remember. But
yeah, he's fighting Glover Teixeira.
He's getting like 25K. That's it.
That's crazy.
That's it.
It's crazy.
And some other guy, I can't remember the name, but there's another fighter that's making like 15, and he's like a 10-fight veteran. Because they've got these tier rankings that if you fought your first fight, you start at 10. Your second fight, you're still at 10. But then you get to the second tier, it's like a 15. You get to the third tier, it's like 20, 25. If you fought over 15, then you get into this like God tier where you're getting a guaranteed 50K each fight in the UFC. But you have to have also accumulated. It's really ridiculous if you think about it, though, that you're talking about these mainstream, big-time fighters just because they don't spout their mouth off and they just do all their damage in the cage, aren't getting paid as much as guys who are just male models. And I love Sage. I think he's good for the sport.
Yeah.
He might not be great at the sport right yet, but yeah, it's disappointing,
ridiculous.
And that's why Bellator is good to have around. You just need competition, because competition breeds success across the plains.
How long until Roy Nelson's the champion of the heavyweight division of Bellator?
We laugh about that because it seems ridiculous, but I'd have to look at the roster right now, but I know they're not necessarily stacked and loaded with heavyweights at the top-notch tier, so it wouldn't surprise me. Wouldn't shock me.
No, I mean, geez, he's like, what was it, Mike Tyson's punch-out. Who was that big guy that it took forever to, like, knock him down?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I can't think
that's
of
like
name.
Roy Nelson, and he's got fireworks in his hand, so if he actually connects with you, like, good night. And Bellator, let's face it, as much as I totally agree with you, and I love Bellator, I think it's phenomenal for the sport, it's still a step down in competition. It's a little step down.
Right.
You look at what Rory McDonald did to Paul Simtek's Daily last week. I mean, he absolutely destroyed him, and that was like the best guy or one of the top two guys in the division,
right.
And Rory McDonald completely outclassed him.
Yeah. Hey, at least the light heavyweights are pretty good. Ryan Bader, he's there.
Yeah, Bader, Phil Davis.
Oh, can't wait for that.
You know, there's definitely some great talent. And a lot of guys that we've had on the show before, you know, you look at Fernando Gonzalez, Emmanuel Sanchez, you know, Syed Awad. There's a lot of legitimate talent that is in Bellator that could very easily make the transition to the UFC if they want to fight here, caught a break there. You just never know what can happen in this sport.
And finally, it looks like we are going to get eventually this Floyd Mayweather Conor McGregor fight. It will not be in September. They've already announced the Triple G Canelo Alvarez fight, which is going to be the best boxing match I think we've seen in eons. That's going to be a great fight.
I'm not going to miss that.
That's going to be tremendous. And if you have not watched boxing in a while and you don't know about Canelo Alvarez or Triple G, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name, his full name. He's just Triple G for all intents and purposes.
Gennady Golovkin.
Not bad. Golovkin. Pretty good. Yeah. Go and check him out. He is an absolute beast, and that's going to be a great fight. But October, November, December, maybe sometime this year at the tail end, we will see McGregor-Mayweather, and we will see a huge amount of money going to Conor's way because it looks like it's all signed, sealed, and delivered, or will be here in the next couple of weeks. Conor signed his half. Mayweather's just bickering over the other half. He's going to make, what, 9 figures
That's
to do this fight?
Stupid.
So,
that's so stupid.
Why wouldn't you do that, especially against a guy who's not necessarily the trained professional boxer?
Yeah, and when I say stupid, I mean that like stupid is good, you know, yeah. like the cool kids say nowadays. Stupid means good.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like not saying it's bad. It's this is phenomenal. Good for Conor, good for Floyd, for them to finagle this where they can make the money that they're going to make for the super fight. I mean, anybody would love to be in their shoes and do what they're doing. So I know I'm going to be one of the guys that are going to be giving my money away to miss it. There's no way in heck I'm going to miss that fight.
All I know is some UFC guys are saying Conor's got a better chance than we think.
I'll tell you what, man. He's got reach. He's got power. You know, it's Floyd Mayweather's 40 years old. You know, I mean, who knows? Anything. That's the thing in a fight. Anything can happen in a fight. And with Conor McGregor's stand up, his pedigree, how smooth he is, how well he moves. Now, granted, we've talked about this time and time again, but Floyd Mayweather clearly as good as it gets, maybe ever in boxing, and McGregor is quite an underdog when it comes to standing and boxing, you know. But you know, you never know. He has a puncher's chance. I just wish that they would find some way to make it a little bit more fair, where it's not just boxing. It can be kind of mixed in, where they both can have, you know, MMA and boxing. Maybe it's just, you know, MMA for the last minute of the round, you know? I don't know.
The Libertard show had this great one. It's like the first round, or it might have been Mikey Mike. It's like the first round is guaranteed boxing. And then it's a 5-round bout. One of the rounds, randomly, we don't know when it is, will be an MMA round.
Yeah.
So, like, it could be round 2, it could be round 3, 4, or 5. If it's round 5, then you would imagine Floyd's going to try to knock this guy out before he gets to round 5. Or do you have it designated? So, like, round 5 is an MMA round out of this 12-round fight. So, you know, Floyd, you need to knock him out, or at least damage him enough that he can't take you down in the 5th round.
I love that. I love that. And it puts the pressure on Floyd to get Conor out of the fight before it goes to the MMA round. Because if it goes to the MMA round, make no mistake about it, McGregor will have Mayweather on his butt in a second, and he's going to be raining down elbows and hammer fists. And, and there would be nothing that Mayweather could do because he's a boxer. He doesn't train mixed martial arts. You know, that's the difference. It's such a frustrating argument to talk about it because, you know, if you got half a brain, you understand that Floyd is a significant favorite here because it's a boxing match. But if the same thing goes if it's an MMA match. So either way, they're going to get my money. What do I got to say?
It's going to be fun, at least, to see the lead up. And Anthony Joshua has talked about fighting in the undercard. Love that move from him. Get more eyeballs on his game. So anything that gets boxing going again, too, I'm all for it, because at the main event we talk boxing too.
Sure do.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's time to take a quick little pause here, and we will come back on the other side with the great content you know and love from the main event.
The Mangler, Matt Bissett, up next. The main event is proud to be sponsored by the Sea Dog Brewing Company. Go to the Sea Dog in Bangor at 26 Front Street, or you can give them a call at 947-8009. Or if you didn't have the time to do that and you were on your computer and just wanted to search them out, you can find them at seadogbrewing.com, which is a link to their direct website. And if you're on Facebook, you can find them at Sea Dog Bangor. All those options for one great place, the Sea Dog at 26 Front Street in Bangor. Also, one thing you don't want to miss if you're a man, or if maybe you have a man and you wanted to make him happy, Man Cave Monday is every Monday from 5 p.m. to close at the Sea Dog in Bangor. $10 beer pitchers, $10 buckets of beer, free pool, and Man Cave giveaways. I know I would be thrilled to be there every Monday if I could make it, because some of the things that they give away are exactly what your man wants for his man cave. So go to the Sea Dog on Monday for Man Cave Monday, and hopefully you'll be able to be one of the lucky winners and get a couple of those giveaways for yourself. Again, the Sea Dog is located at 26 Front Street in Bangor, right next to the Penobscot River. Call them at 947-8009 and visit them at seadogbrewing.com. We'll be right back. back on the show for the second time is the reigning defending CES featherweight champion who last defended his belt at CES 44 with a second round KO of Ray Trujillo. The Mangler, Matt Pesett, is back on the main event. Thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me, brother. I appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure to have you on, man. We've always talked about where we see your career going, and I truly believe we're going to see you in the big show here one day soon. We'll dive into that a little bit later. But first, you know, the last time that we had you on the show, you were preparing to defend your belt against Kevin Kroom at CES 41, and you did so via round three TKO. You had some really nice things to say about Kevin after the fight. Tell us a little bit about your interactions with Kroom after the fight and break down how the fight played out for our listeners.
After the fight, I went up to him right after the finish and just make sure he's all right. And the doctor's checking on him. I always want to make sure my opponent is, you know, all there. And because I know how difficult it is, whether you win or lose, it's a lot on your body, it's a lot on your brain. So I'll just go over there and check on my opponent and thank him for everything. And then went in the back, did some hugging and some high-fiving and stuff like that with my corner. And then I usually go into my opponent's locker room, as long as they're cool, and we're cool. I go into my opponent's locker room and talk to him. And I just went up to him again. I thanked him again. And I told him he's a tough motherfucker, and he's going to get back out there and he's going to get a victory because, you know, that's what he does. He wins fights. So, just give him a little bit of motivation going forward, and, you know, that's pretty much it. But he's a really cool guy. And, we spoke a couple times since the fight online, and he's expressed interest in maybe coming up this way to the Northeast and cross-training a little bit. And I got open doors for him, so that'd be really cool.
Yeah, that's really cool to hear. I mean, we had Kevin on the same show when we had you on for the first time, and he just seemed like a really humble, down to earth, good guy. How difficult of a fight was that for you? I know you got the win, and you seemed to do it fairly handily. Anyways, how hard of a fight was that in contrast to your most recent one over Trujillo?
I don't know. Every person, they have different qualities that, you know, you could, that work against you and then also work in your favor. So, with Kroom, Kevin Kevin didn't have as much head movement as say like a guy like Joe Ping. So it was a little easier to, get off combination, mm-hmm. In that respect. That's why I landed a lot with him. He just didn't have, at least that day, he wasn't moving his head all too much. So it was easier to pop off with that. Whereas Trujillo was pretty mobile. Joe Ping was pretty mobile. You know, anytime you got a mobile guy, it's just a little bit harder to hit him. Trujillo was pretty physically strong, actually. He was smaller than me, but he was also pretty strong. I'm not like a outrageously strong guy, but where I don't excel certain places, I make up for that elsewhere. So, like I said, every person has different strengths, but, you expose their weaknesses and then you run with it.
And you clearly have done a good job of doing that throughout your career. With your most recent title defense, your second title defense here, you become the first CES fighter to ever defend a belt twice, setting a record there. How pleased are you with your most recent victory over Trujillo?
First off, it's awesome that I'm breaking records right now for CES. That's super cool. I've had a good 2017 so far. I was happy with my last couple of performances. They were pretty dominant. So, I'm in a good position right now, to say the least. So I'm happy with where I'm at.
Now, what is it you like to do after a fight, Matt? Is there a specific time frame you like to take off to let your body heal? And is there a certain food that you just can't wait to indulge in when you're done with all the grind of getting to the fight and then competing?
Yeah, it's always different. Sometimes I'll fight on a Friday and like I'm not happy with my performance, and maybe I feel like $1 million, and I get right back in the gym on Monday, and I'm doing five rounds of back work and, you know, doing the MMA class later on. And then there's other times where I'm a little bruised up and I want to take a week off, let it heal. You know, sometimes I'm just really excited to get back in the gym, and other times I'm like, damn, I need a little mental break. So it's always different. But as far as food goes, let's see. As far as food goes, sometimes I have the sweet tooth, and sometimes I'm like, give me all of the carbs that you have in your cupboard, you know. So after this one, I think I did the cheeseburger thing like I usually do. And for some reason, I was on like a little cereal kick. I ate a few boxes of cereal in the first 5 days that I was resting after the fight.
What was
cereal?
What cereal, though? Was it like Lucky Charms, Cocoa Puffs? What was the cereal?
No. not that shit. Although none of it's really good for you because there's a lot of carbs in it. But it's like the organic stuff. You know, I'm at least eating organic. Organic sugar. That's what I'm eating.
Okay, well, I mean, you're a fighter, so you're obviously conscientious about what you're putting into your body. But I'm sure that little break of being able to indulge a little bit is always really nice.
Oh, you have no idea. it's a beautiful thing.
Now, Matt, you run Ascension MMA, which is in Bristol, Connecticut, and Russell Leak is your head coach there. How have things been going since this last fight, and how has business been there? Are you guys staying nice and busy?
Actually, I myself and Jeff Haddad own Ascension Athletics, and that is in Bristol, Connecticut. And Russell Leak owns Underdog MMA in West Hartford, Connecticut. And I train full-time at Underdog, and I also train and teach at Ascension. But everything's going great. I just got done finishing a gi class. It was a smaller class today, but a lot of times when there's smaller classes, there's really good information shared, and there can be a lot of questions.
So obviously things have been going great with Ascension and Underdog. You clearly continue to progress throughout your career. What is a normal day like for you there during training? Does it just change up from week to week depending on whether you have a fight or one of the other fighters in your gym have a fight? Is there some sort of schedule that you guys typically stick to?
I tend to stick to my own schedule. And, you know, honestly, unless something crazy happens where I'm hurt or something, or I'm going on vacation for a week or something like that with my family, I'm always in the gym and I'm always ready to fight. I pretty much always have the same schedule where I'm training MMA once or twice a week, jiu-jitsu two or three times a week, striking three or four times a week. So, I mean, I got my mitt sessions, I got my drilling sessions, all that. So I got my sprint sessions and my lifting sessions. I have a lot to do. So I train 6 days a week, 2 to 3 times a day, and you know, I don't get tired because I love it. You know, it's easy to get tired when you're like bummed out and there's no motivation to be there. But I wake up and I'm like, "Where's my wife? Check. I love her. Where's my son? Check. I love him. I'm gonna get something to eat, and then I'm gonna go kill my day." And you know, I just look forward to training all the time. So, and it's always the same thing with me. I'm always ready to fight. I'm always in the gym.
And I definitely think that that's one of the main reasons why you're at where you are right now. And, you know, Matt, all I ever hear and see on social media is people demanding you get your shot in the UFC. The last time we had you on, we talked about that. And I truly believe, from everything that I've seen, that your time is right around the corner, for whatever my opinion means. I just wanted to say that. Now, I have to imagine it's incredibly hard to grind your way through your career the way that you have, especially when you're blessed with like an abundance of talent and to match with the work ethic that you currently have. But from what I understand, that is nothing new to you. You've been fighting your whole life. For anyone that doesn't know, you actually battled leukemia for 7 or 8 years and came out victorious and beat that. What does it do for you to know that you were able to overcome such a scary thing? And how does that help you put things into perspective with your day-to-day life now?
Just like you said, I've battled. I've been battling my entire life. It's nothing new. I find peace in like a battle setting. I've been doing it my whole life. If you can't find peace in your everyday, day-to-day struggles, then everything becomes challenging. And, you know, if you can take those struggles and just kind of run with it, no matter what your struggles are, just always looking on the positive side of things, you know, it makes life easier. And there was nothing I could do about having leukemia, so it was pointless to be negative while it happened, you know. So I try to stay positive. My mom was positive, and I'm positive every day. Even now, when we're talking about you know, the UFC, like, I have 7 straight victories. They're all finishes. I fought 3 times for the title in the past 8 months or 9 months or something. Like, that's unheard of. And, you know, I legitimately thought I could have fought in the UFC 5 years ago. So at this point, it's like, you know, if I'm going to sit here and dwell on not getting my shot when I think I should have got my shot, it's just going to be, I'm going to be a negative Nancy, and I'm not going to be fun to be around. So I just grind, man, and I have fun doing it. And it's just going to get worse and worse for my opponents because I'm getting better and better. So the longer they hold out, the worse it's going to be for whoever I get in there with.
Man, do you feel like you have any inkling towards that your time will finally come with the UFC? Do you feel like there's any sort of progression towards that, or are you just still status quo?
100%. I truly feel like my next fight is going to be in the UFC. And it's just, like you said, you feel like it's just around the corner. And it's a feeling I have. And nobody has told me that anything soon is coming up for me. So much as being able to talk to Shelby and my manager on a regular basis, and they know who I am. I'm saying I'm at the top of their list and this and that, but I just have a really, really good feeling. So that's why I'm ready, man. I'm not gonna not be ready for this huge opportunity. It'd be the dumbest thing ever. You know, I'm always ready to do 5 fives every time I fight. So there's a UFC coming up on June 25th, I think, and there's 4 featherweights on that card, and I think 2 of them are BJ Penn and Dennis Seaver. The other 2 are Jared Gordon and I can't remember his opponent's name at the moment. And you know, Seaver's backed out several times. BJ's backed out several times. Jared had a weight cutting issue his last time out, so I very legitimately could be called up for June 25th. You never know. So guess what? I was at the gym yesterday doing my sprints, and to a normal person, you know, nobody wants to get up and do sprints and prepare for a fight that they don't have. You know, nobody wants to do that.
Right.
But I do it. I prepare for it because I believe that my time is now. I'm going to be called to UFC soon.
And I think regardless of what field it is that you're in, whether it's MMA, whether you're, you work at a school, regardless of what it is that you do, having that mindset, being positive, staying positive, that's what helps you get through, and that's what helps you get to that next level. I truly believe that. And, you know, with, again, Matt, talking about everything that you have overcome now and seeing where you're at now, I'm curious with all your positivity, have you been able to really, you know, instill that in helping others that may be battling some sort of illness or whatnot? I spoke to Travis Lizette of Western Mass MMA, and he told me that you actually are working to raise money for a charity called Water 4 to build wells in Africa. So can you tell us a little bit more about that endeavor and some of the other things that you've done, the hard things that you've gone through to help others now?
That's a pretty long list of stuff that I try to, I don't just try to help Water 4. I try to help, people from a day to day. I like teaching. I like teaching. I like helping. I like giving people power. I like empowering others. So like I said, cause that's what my mother has done my entire life. My father has done my entire life. They empower me. And I love that feeling of being, in complete control of myself, not of anybody else, but it's complete control of myself, a complete control of my emotions, of my feelings, of what happens to me, how I react to things. I like to instill that into others. Right now, the Water 4 thing is, there was a big buzz about me before my last fight on May 12th, and there was a huge buzz afterwards. So I used that opportunity to create a Water 4 account with Fights to Forgotten, which I've done before, to help raise money for people in the Congo and Africa to try to build some wells, get them some clean water. And, we did that successfully. It was like a year and a half ago about now, maybe a year ago, a year and a half. And we did that successfully. We raised like a little over $2,000, which $2,000 roughly about that. They can get the necessary stuff to be able to build a well and then teach the locals how to run it and maintain it and stuff. So, you know, the goal was for this one to raise $2,000. And right now we're at, I think, a little over $1,500. So, and it's been 2 weeks. So we have like three more weeks to go that I have this this fundraiser open. So, you know, if we can raise, you know, I think it's like $450 left, which I know we can, then we'll be able to build another well in the Congo.
Now, for anybody that's listening right now, where can they go to help donate money?
What is the exact? I think it's water4.org. And I think it's /Mangler Nation. I think it's /Mangler Nation. It's also, I think the title of the fundraiser is Mangler Nation Building More Wells.
Well, that is very cool. I mean, and when it comes right down to it, that's what life is all about, is helping others, no matter what success that we have in our own lives. If we can impact others and do something that you're doing, that's what it's all about. So I truly commend you for that.
It is. Thank you, man. Thank you. And, you know, not enough people know that. Not enough people know that. That is a fact. The fact of life is not simply, you know, setting goals and reaching them. It's helping others do the same, you know, because we're all connected. It's all a big society. Whether you think that you're alone or not, you're not. So, you know, reach out to others and help others. If somebody's helped you along the way, pass that along. That is your goal.
It's your obligation.
That's what I'm looking for.
It's kind of your obligation
as
a human being.
That's your obligation. That's what I'm looking for. That's your obligation to help others, just the way you were helped to help others.
That's what it's about, man. That is great. Now, I want to switch gears here just a little bit. You have a love for the band Tool, and you have a tattoo of your favorite song, 46 and 2, on your back, from what I understand. Now, Tool is actually performing right across the street from us tonight in Bangor, where we do the show. So my question is, how come you're not up here in studio with us and going to go to the concert with us after the show?
Shut up. Don't even rub it in my face. When I went online, the tickets were like $500+. And I'm like, and it's the Boston Calling, right?
No, they're actually playing they're playing in Bangor, Maine tonight. And I actually, now that I think of it, I have a free ticket too. If you were able to make it up to Bangor in like, I don't know, 6 hours.
Shut up.
Yeah, no, seriously, they're playing in Bangor, Maine tonight.
Yeah.
They're literally right across the street from us right now.
I had no idea. I thought you were talking about the Boston Calling, which is coming up.
Yeah, they're playing Boston. Yep, they're playing Boston tomorrow night, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't even know about that. I didn't even know. Now you just brought this whole conversation into something extremely negative for me. I can't go tonight. I'm bringing my wife out on our monthly date, and we're going to a paint bar. We're going to drink a little wine, and we're going to do some painting and shit. Really, just romantic, you know.
Well, that's good. I mean, when it comes right down to it, you got to put the wife first. So there will always be more Tool concerts.
I had no idea they were playing in Maine tonight.
Maybe we'll take a video and send it to you, man. It'd be like you're there.
That wouldn't work. Don't do that, because that's just gonna make me more upset.
Well, we'll be thinking of you anyways. Regardless, we'll be sending our energy down there, and maybe
good.
You know,
Thank you.
We'll do that for you.
I appreciate that.
Now, Matt, I also understand that you're a big Yankees fan. How do you think that they're going to do this season? Do you expect them to make the postseason and maybe take another a run at winning a World Series?
Absolutely. I think this is their year. I think they have a young, strong, talented team. And, you know, they have a good lineup, and they started off real well. So, you know, it's a long season, so we'll see what happens. I've only been able to catch a few games fully. Sorry, I have a call come in. I've only been able to catch a few games fully right now because I have a full schedule, but you know, I catch the highlights, and the Yanks are doing well right now.
Open weight fight between you and Aaron Judge. Who wins?
In a fight?
Yeah.
Come on. It's a fight. We're not hitting home runs here.
He's 6'7", 285, though.
I said so.
Okay. Yeah. I just want to make sure. Fight. Good. Good. It's good to have the confidence.
That's what I do, man.
Yeah.
That's what I do. Weight means nothing.
I'm on board with you, Matt. I put my money on you 100%. Having said that, do you think someone like an Aaron Judge, who's like a physical freak, if he put the time in, do you think that he'd have the natural ability to maybe make the transition over to MMA?
You know the answer to that. Absolutely.
Yep.
I train and train with people like that all the time, you know. Some people are just very physically gifted, just genetic specimens, and he's one of them.
Yeah. For sure. Well, I know I'm a big Red Sox fan, so I'm hoping that maybe we meet your team in the postseason and have another epic series.
Always. This time it goes seven and the Yankees win.
I don't think
maybe
so.
Maybe the Red Sox start 3-0 and then the Yankees win the next four.
No,
a little reversal of fortune.
Please,
there.
No. I don't think I could bear that. My soul would just be ripped out of the body after that 0-4 season, which was such an elational high and whatnot. But you know what? It's good to see both teams doing well.
I was really upset when that happened, but then it took me a day, and I was like, "Wow, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful thing." You know, the Sox that come from behind four straight games, and Big Poppy just showed so much versatility in that. That was his coming out. Of being the DH position became that much better just because of him. He really made the DH position something special. So that was a great series for baseball.
It was epic, and it was definitely a sports history. It's always good to have you on the show, Matt, and it's been nice to talk a little bit of some of your other loves outside of MMA today. And, whenever you do get that shot, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, one of those featherweights drops out and you get onto that same Oklahoma City card on the 25th of June. Let's get you back on the show, and we'll break down who the UFC featherweight that is going to lose to you in your debut will be.
Without a doubt, man. Without a doubt.
Awesome.
I'll let you know, and then you can give me a call, and we can do this again.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day, man. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take it easy.
The Sea Dog Brewing Company is located on 26 Front Street in Bangor, right next to the Penobscot River. You can call them at 947-8009 or visit them at seadogbrewing.com. The Sea Dog is doing unbelievable things for the MMA community here in Bangor and in Maine, for that matter. Not only do they sponsor our show, and we're very, very grateful for that, but they also sponsor five unbelievable professional mixed martial artists, including the Ryan Sanders, Josh Harvey, Bruce Boyington, and Aaron Lacey, all of Young's MMA right here in Bangor, Maine. All great fighters, all unbelievable careers ahead of them. They're very, very young. They have unbelievable things that they're going to do here in the sport. Why don't we all just rally around them and help push their careers to that next level? Well, that's what the Sea Dog is doing. Not only do they sponsor our homegrown local-based fighters, they also sponsor former NEF lightweight champion and now UFC fighter Devin Powell. That just goes to show you the Sea Dog is growing with mixed martial arts here in the community, and they're helping us do our show as well. So thank you to the Sea Dog for everything that you do, and do yourself a favor. Go down to the Sea Dog and support them. Get one of their delicious beers on tap. Get a Blue Paw. That's what I would get. They're the best beer that they have there, or get one of their unbelievable entrees or appetizers that they have day in and day out. Again, the Sea Dog is located on 26 Front Street in Bangor, or you can call them at 947-800. The Sea Dog. Joining us now is a 14-4 professional welterweight who will look to pick up his second win in the UFC when he takes on Keiichi Kunimoto at UFC Fight Night 110 at the Vector Arena in New Zealand on June 10th. The Barbarian, Zach Otto, joins the main event. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me on.
Now, Zach, you're coming off a tough split decision loss to Sergio Moraes at UFC Fight Night 100, and that was in November of last year. What has life looked like you since? What have you been up to?
Yeah, well, I had a wrist injury that I got in my first fight in the UFC, and I was just kind of taping that up and working through it. The next fight got scheduled right away, So, you know, we deal with injuries all the time, and I thought it was just a bad sprain. And then here I got an MRI and everything, and turns out I completely tore a ligament in my wrist. So that's why I didn't have much grip strength or mobility in that wrist for a little while. So I kind of had to wait for that to heal up a little bit. And then the whole time I've been working on my kicks and, you know, just kind of working around it with my strength and conditioning, keeping up with my running and stuff. But had to really wait for that to heal before I could fully get training all the way back again. And then I was just kind of working on some new things that I need to work on, you know, that were kind of shown to me in the last fight. And then just kind of waiting for the phone to ring. And this opportunity came up. So kind of how it worked.
Now, how difficult is that for you as a fighter who, you know, you want to get in there and you want to clinch and throw punches and do everything that you normally would do during training? How hard is that when you actually have to take a step back and work on other things to keep yourself fresh and ready to go when you're fully healthy?
I did have a busy 2016, so I had five fights. I was pretty mentally ready for a break, so it was actually good. It kind of forced me to take a break for a little while, which I needed physically and mentally. It was a really kind of a refreshing thing to come back to training then when my wrist was healed up and get to work on some new stuff, have fun in the gym a little bit, because last year was pretty much just, you know, bread and butter stuff all year long, getting ready for the next fight. So now I kind of had a chance to play with some new techniques, have a little fun in the gym again and stuff.
When you do take that break and you come back and you're refreshed, do you feel even stronger when you get back in there because you've allowed your body to heal up so much?
Yeah, I do definitely feel stronger. Nagging injuries don't nag me anymore, but it does definitely affect the cardio when you're not actually fighting. It's a whole different kind of cardio in itself.
Right.
Mixing up the isolation holds with the grappling and then the explosiveness with the striking, and you need strength, you need endurance. It's just kind of, you know, it's the ultimate sport. So
right. There's nothing that can replicate actually getting in there and sparring
exactly.
and training.
You can run all you want and you can, you know, do your strength and conditioning workouts and all that, but nothing you can really reciprocate actually doing. You know, what we do.
For sure. Now, aside from climbing into the octagon for a living, you are the promoter for Pure Fighting Championships, which is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Tell us a little bit more about this MMA promotion.
Yeah, we're actually about to have our seventh show on June 24th, and we've been fortunate to have really cool venues. We're going to be downtown Milwaukee again at the historic Milwaukee Theater. Every show we've been getting bigger and better. The same partner that I own the gym with, I also own the promotion with. So from owning a gym and coaching fighters and traveling and cornering people, we know a lot of promoters and other coaches around the northern Midwest, and we've been able to put together some really, really talented cards. And like I said, we just keep doing it bigger and better each time. This next show is going to be amazing. We're definitely... Our goal is to be a huge feeder into the bigger organizations, you know, like Bellator and UFC. And we've, out of our first six shows, we've had two main event fighters go to the UFC. So
wow, who are those fighters?
Rick Glenn and actually myself. So I okay. It was like one of our first shows. We were just kind of starting to get going. I needed another win quick, and I kind of stepped down from promoter. My partner Jake took that full role that show, and I just focused on my training. And I beat a Rufus Port fighter, and I had a little win streak going at the time and stuff, and that's what got me in.
Can you think of any other promoters? Like, do you think a Dana White would do that in that situation, just put himself into the main event?
I know some hope he would, but I don't think he would. I know he's done some grappling and stuff like that, but... I would think if anybody would toss themselves in there, it'd probably be Joe Rogan or something, right?
Oh, yeah. I love Joe Rogan.
I actually just watched Herb Dean in a fight when he was over in England. I guess he tried to see
him. Oh, yeah,
that's
right. Yep. Herb Dean used to fight. Yep.
Now, obviously, this has worked out great for you, Zach. You're in the UFC now. Where do you, I'm just curious, where do you get your talent from for your promotion here, Pure Fighting Championships? Do you pool outside of your state, or is it mostly guys that are right around in your general area?
We try to really put together really fair competitive matchups because that makes exciting fights. You'll see a lot. I mean, tons of promotions all across the country are owned by gym owners, and then there'll be like 15 fights on the night. 14 of them will be people from their own gym, and they'll all be in favorable matchups, and they'll go 14-0. And all that really does is just kind of bring down the show. And it doesn't, like, other people outside of your gym don't want to fight on the show. Mm-hmm. And then eventually it kind of fades. What we've been doing is trying to keep less than half the fights are guys and girls from our own gym, and pull from either other Milwaukee area gyms or, you know, other gyms across the state. And then either have them fight other local opponents, or we pull from the surrounding states. Always competitive matchups. We really like to especially challenge our amateurs, make sure that they face some adversity and stuff during their amateur career. Nobody's ever asked me what my amateur record was or really cared, so I don't feel like it really matters at all. So it's all just gaining experience, making sure that you're fighting a whole different types of styles and really gaining that experience in the cage, which you can't reciprocate in the gym.
For sure.
And then once, you know, you go pro, then you kind of start have to managing your fighters a little bit more appropriately.
Now, would you ever consider bringing in a fighter from, say, the Northeast, for example? I got to tell you, we have quite a number of legitimate fighters here in our state of Maine, which is where we do our show, that are really starting to move on and do some big things. And I could think of a couple guys in particular right off the bat that I know would be top-level fighters if you're looking for someone else in your neck of the woods to match them up against.
Most definitely. We have flown in people before. And in order to really put on those higher level, you know, we definitely want to get those guys that are right on the cusp over the edge into getting signed. So in order to do that, it's, you know, we can't just be pulling from Wisconsin every time.
Sure.
We've definitely flown some people in before, and we'd love to do that. I know that Maine has, I've heard about it. I know out in the Northeast there's a really good regional circuit out there, and that'd be really cool.
Yeah, I'll send you some stuff later today, and when you got some time, you can check it out. There's a couple guys in particular
awesome.
That I'm thinking about. If you check out some of their tape, you might be really interested. Now, clearly, Zach, you know, MMA is a driving force in your life. How did you first start? How did you first fall in love with MMA?
I did wrestle in high school, but I was more focused on football, and I played some football in college at the Air Force Academy. So it's a D1 school, got that experience and stuff for a couple of years. And then, I'd come back home. I was going to just state school, and where I was going, they didn't have a football team. And, I don't know. I had that competitive itch. I still felt like I could compete at a high level athletically. And all I was really doing was just being a gym rat, like going to the gym every day and lifting weights. And I was kind of getting bored with it. When I had seen the UFC on TV, it actually wasn't something that interested me right away. It wasn't until I had some friends that were kind of getting involved with jiu-jitsu, and then I knew somebody that had a regional amateur fight coming up, and I went and watched them fight, and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. I want to try this out. And I missed grappling and stuff like that, so I went and tried jiu-jitsu. And I just fell in love with it right away. As soon as I was having my first classes, I knew that this is what I wanted to do. And soon after that, I started taking the kickboxing classes, and that came really naturally to me right away. So the next step was, you know, to have my first amateur fight, and I just got hooked.
Now, when did you realize that that making the UFC was actually an attainable goal for you?
I would say very, very early on. This may sound, I don't know, funny to you, but it was probably actually after my first amateur fight because I lost. So I started out 0-1 as an amateur, and I'm like, I can definitely make it to the UFC. So it sounds totally ridiculous, but I fought a really, really experienced fighter my first fight, mm-hmm. and I had only been training for like 5 months. And, you know, this was back before regulation and all that. And so the matchups. You could just get matched up against anybody if you wanted. And
I did really well against
a really experienced fighter. And I just felt like every week I was in the gym, I was just taking up so much like a sponge that all it was just a matter of time.
Are you talking about the fight against Mike Rhodes?
No, my first amateur fight. That was my first pro fight.
That was your first pro fight. Oh, okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure.
Yeah, my first amateur fight was summer of 2010.
Oh, okay, so geez, it has been a while now.
And it was in Illinois, yeah.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you are the co-owner of Pure Vida BJJ and MMA, which is in Milwaukee. How much does it help you to have your own facility at your disposal to help you prepare for these fights?
Big time. You know, I went through my amateur career, and then after I lost to Mike Rhodes in May of 12, I actually moved into the gym to live in June. And we have like there was a side room connected to the gym, but you had to use like the gym sink and the gym bathroom for her running water, basically. And there's no windows in the area. There's no running water and no air conditioning. I lived in there for 4 years, actually.
Wow.
So, yeah, from June of 12 to June of 16, and shortly right after that, then I got signed. So that stretch of, like, living at the gym, completely, like, dedicating myself, being focused, really, really helped me get to where I need to be, making those sacrifices. Owning the gym really helps. I really think teaching helps. I constantly have to be on my toes because I have all these students asking me questions all the time. I have to stay up to date on the newest techniques, and I'm just completely obsessed with the sport. You know, if I'm not at the gym, I'm watching UFC fights. I'm studying tape all the time. I'm going to jiu-jitsu seminars all over. I compete in jiu-jitsu. I coach jiu-jitsu, you know, all that. Just my whole life revolves around this.
Clearly, that's what's helped you get to where you're at right now. That's a really cool story to hear, that you came from such humble beginnings, living in the gym for 4 years without a window, and now you're in the UFC. So that's a very, very cool thing to hear. Now, Zach, who are some of the other coaches that are there that are helping you teach all of these kids and the students that you have coming into your facility?
Sure. Jay Clip is the other owner. He's... you know, does a great job kind of being the head coach, because obviously I get pretty involved with my fight camps and stuff. And at this point, we have over 30 people on our competition fight team. So there's quite a bit of people to manage regionally and, you know, get them fights and traveling to fights and stuff. I do travel a lot, but he does the majority of, you know, making those matchups and traveling if need be, if I can't. Also, my brother is one of our striking coaches. Nick Trost, and he does a phenomenal job. Along with, we brought on another kickboxing instructor about less than a year ago that we've known for a while. His name's Solo Acosta, and he's awesome. And then we have a whole bunch of other assistant coaches: Adam Vanderveen, Omar Brabiel. So it's a pretty well-rounded staff. A lot of high-level jiu-jitsu guys and really, really good striking coaches. We have quite a bit of fighters that are coming up. I'd say within the next year or two, you're definitely going to know our name all over the UFC. A lot of guys just kind of ending very, very successful amateur careers and starting to now enter into their pro careers and, you know, starting off undefeated, but they've only had a couple fights so far. A lot of them are fighting on the show coming up June 24th. Leah Letson is one of our fighters. She's signed to Invicta, and she had a head kick knockout in January against a UFC vet. And it's like one of the knockouts of the year so far.
Yeah.
So she actually got deployed overseas through the Air National Guard. So she's gone for 6 months, but once she gets back, we'll probably get her a fight, whether it's Invicta, kind of knock the rust off a little bit, and she'll get signed, I'm sure. She's a total beast. Not a boring fighter, very exciting. She knocks people out, and she's definitely going to be at the top very soon.
Oh, yeah, I definitely know who he is.
Yeah, we also have Rick Glenn, who transferred to our gym and is in the UFC. And like I said, as we've kind of had some success, not only have we brought up and developed our own fighters, but we've also had some really good talent from the surrounding area that has relocated and moved to Milwaukee just to train with us. So it's been pretty cool the last year or two.
Now, for anybody that wants to come in and go to your gym and give it a try and see what it's all about, where can they find you guys on social media? Do you have a Facebook page, and how can they contact you?
Yep, we have a Facebook page, Pura Vida BJJ and MMA, and then our website, puravidabjj.com. We're right south of downtown on First and Walker. You know, a lot of people think because they go to a fight gym, like they're going to have to fight people right away and stuff. And that's totally not what it is. I mean, we do have over 30 people on our competition team, but we have many, many other members that, you know, we call hobbyists. They love to train, to be in shape and know the skills, but they have full-time jobs and families, and they're not, you know, changing anything different. They just like to train. So whether it's self-defense or to get in shape, we have all those kinds of classes 7 days a week. So, yeah, the best way to do it is just to look at our schedule online, puravidabjj.com, and then stop into any class they want to try first, and we can talk to them.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I always try to tell my friends as well, is that, you know, they get scared thinking that they're going to come into an MMA gym and that they're just going to get beat up and thrown around, and that really isn't the case. I would consider myself much more of a hobbyist than an actual competitor, because I've never gone out there and tried to compete even as an amateur, but I do like to go in there and train and stay in shape and learn the skills, because I love the sport. But it takes a certain kind of person to be able to do what you do and step in the cage and compete in front of you know, thousands of people, because it is not an easy thing to do. So that's something that I definitely want to emphasize to all of our listeners who want to go and check it out. Just because it's MMA and they do get punched in the face, you don't have to do that if you don't want to. You can still step in there and learn the skills without getting beat up.
Most definitely, and age as well. I mean, we have a 67-year-old lady who started taking kickboxing classes, and 2 years later, she still comes 3 days a week, you know, so... it's really for everybody.
That's really cool. Now, Zach, let's start talking about your next fight here on June 10th. As I mentioned earlier, taking on Kunimoto. What is it that you've been preparing specifically to take him down?
I'm just going to go in there loose, and wherever the fight goes, the fight goes. I think, a pretty good job of learning my opponents. And I have a lot of finishes on my record, but they've never been like 30 seconds, the majority of them. I don't like come in and just overwhelm the person with strength and athleticism. I'm able to kind of come in, figure them out a little bit, and either late in the first round or second round is when I've gotten a lot of my finishes. So he hasn't fought in over 2 years. It's kind of hard to prepare a little bit. I don't know if he's going to be like a completely evolved fighter, refreshed fighter, or he's 36. He's had over 25 pro fights. Sometimes it's kind of hard to teach an old dog new tricks. Is he going to come in with same old thing he's been doing for years and kind of on the way out? You know, I'm going to prepare for the absolute best version of himself, but I'm not really going to worry too much about him, and I'm just going to go in there and do my thing and find my openings and exploit and look for the finish. I'm definitely want to get back to my finishing ways here. I've had 3 decisions in a row. Before that, I think I was like 12 out of 12 with my wins were all finishes. And now I've had, you know, 2 split decisions, and one hasn't went my way. So really want to get back to finishing people.
Well, this will be the second time, too, that you travel outside the country for a fight in the UFC. How is this different than, say, fighting stateside in the continental United States for you?
Oh, it's quite a bit different. My weight cuts aren't the easiest, down to 170. Please let there be a 175-pound weight class. That'd be amazing. and, you know, fighting on the regional level, I really stay diligent all week. I really like to... like when I fight regionally, I'll pack like a camping stove, and I'll call ahead of time to the hotel, figure out if they have a fridge and a microwave. If they don't, I'll bring my own. I mean, I like pack the truck, you know, full of all this stuff for the week so that I can prep exactly what I want to eat. And then even with the recovery after weigh-ins, so many fighters, even at the highest level, it's crazy to me how they'll make weight and then they'll go down and eat cheeseburgers and french fries and drink soda. Like, oh, post weigh-in meal, like my weight cut's over. Yeah, but you're about to go compete at like the climax of all of this is about to happen tomorrow, and you're putting like the worst fuel in your body. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So the 24 hours up until I eat or up until I compete, I still eat really, really well. It's just more quantity, but the quality is still high. And it's a little bit harder to control that when you're traveling way across to another country and you don't have the amenities and everything like that that you can bring just driving to a regional show. Brazil, luckily, I had just had a fight right before that, and my weight was really far down. So I thought it was going to be like a really easy weight cut, and it just kind of went normal for me because there really wasn't as many food options as I thought there would be. So
are you looking forward to getting past this fight, picking up this W, and then the next time out just being able to compete somewhere, preferably near Milwaukee, I'd like to say, maybe a UFC fight night or a big pay-per-view?
You know, people always say, like, oh, man, this is so cool. You're going to Brazil, you're going to New Zealand. And, yeah, but, like, you have a task at hand, you know. Like, I can't just go there and, like, have fun and sightsee and party. You know, like, I'm there for a purpose. It's much better to corner and travel. If I'm cornering, then hey, let's go across the other side of the world. Awesome. But when I'm fighting, I mean, I know I have to do it because the UFC is a global sport and I'm totally willing to do it and it's fine. But ideally, if I could fight in my own backyard every fight, that would be the easiest thing to do. I mean, just as far as being in a routine, sticking to the same sleep schedule, prepping your meals, all that would just go way easier fighting closer to home.
For sure. Now you mentioned earlier that your opponent, Kunimoto, hasn't fought for quite a while. His last fight was a submission loss to Neil Magny at UFC Fight Night 60, and that was in February of 2015. So, again, quite some time off. Now, Zach, is there anything that you believe that Kunimoto does as good as you, or do you believe that you hold the advantage wherever the fight goes here?
He's pretty good at position control on the mat. When he gets it on top, or if he takes your back or gets to a dominant position, he looks like he can be pretty hard to shake off. I know quite a bit of jiu-jitsu guys that have trained in Asia before and kind of around where he's from, and a lot of them aren't very submission savvy. But they're very, very good at passing the guard and positional control. And I have seen that in his fights. If he, you know, takes her back, he's going to be really hard to get off before the end of the round. So that's definitely something that I've been working on, just making sure that if I find myself in bad positions that I can escape out of those and either get to a dominant position or get back up to my feet.
Now, you clearly are very well-spoken and seem like a very humble guy here, so I'm not sure if you're much of a guy to give predictions or not, but how do you see this fight ending? Do you see yourself getting the finish here?
I definitely see myself getting the finish. I really don't know what round it's going to be or how it's going to be, but I'll find a way. I got you this time, and I definitely want to get one of those bonuses. So I came into the UFC being known as a finisher, and I'd definitely like to get back to my finishing ways. And usually that's like the same way you hit a baseball for a home run. You know, if you try too hard sometimes, it's not going to work. Just kind of have to be patient and make sure I'm finding my openings, and I'm very confident that it will come.
Well, I know myself or my co-host here, Brian, will not miss this card. Again, it's going to be in New Zealand at the Vector Arena on June 10th when our guest here now, Zach Otto, takes on Keiichi Kunimoto at UFC Fight Night 110. Before we let you go, Zach, anybody you'd like to thank that helped prepare you, or any sponsors that helped you get ready for this big fight?
Yeah, of course, I want to thank my team, Pura Vida, BJJ, and MMA, best team in the world that's coming up. all the coaches that go along with that, and my training partners grinding along with me every day. My friends and family that support me, and then my sponsors as well. Ink on Clothing, Upper 90 Sports Pub, where you can actually watch the fight that night too, if you want to come out and watch it with other people. And then also my strength and conditioning coach, Midwest Fitness and Sports Performance.
Zach, thank you so much
and
for coming on.
Thank you guys, too, for having me on the show.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. I was just going to say we'd love to have you back on here in the near future. And again, I'll be in touch here soon. It's been a pleasure having you on today.
Thank you. Pleasure talking to you guys.
The main event is proud to be sponsored by the Sea Dog Brewing Company. Go to the Sea Dog in Bangor at 26 Front Street, or you can give them a call at 947-8009. Or if you didn't have the time to do that and you were on your computer and just wanted to search them out, you can find them at seadogbrewing.com, which is a link to their direct website. And if you're on Facebook, you can find them at Sea Dog Bangor. All those options for one great place, the Sea Dog at 26 Front Street in Bangor. Also, one thing you don't want to miss if you're a man, or if maybe you have a man and you wanted to make him happy, Man Cave Monday is every Monday from 5 p.m. to close at the Sea Dog in Bangor. $10 beer pitchers, $10 buckets of beer, free pool, and Man Cave giveaways. I know I would be thrilled to be there every Monday if I could make it, because some of the things that they give away are exactly what your man wants for his man cave. So go to the Sea Dog on Monday for Man Cave Monday, and hopefully you'll be able to be one of the lucky winners and get a couple of those giveaways for yourself. Again, the Sea Dog is located at 26 Front Street in Bangor, right next to the Penobscot River. Call them at 947-8009 and visit them at seadogbrewing.com.
Of course, as we mentioned before, we've had a couple of recorded shows since, so this is the first time, unfortunately, we've been on since the news of the passing of Chris Cornell. Such sad stuff. I remember we were talking about it, what was it, Thursday?
Are you trying to make me cry?
No. I mean it's sad, of course, finding out the suicide of Chris Cornell, but again, the way I like to think of it is, though he's no longer with us, it's still he made an impact in so many people's lives with the great music of Soundgarden, Temple of the Dog,
Audioslave,
you know, some of his solo stuff beyond that. So though he is no longer here on this earth, his impact will live on forever. So I like to celebrate
it's extremely
sad, though. And you got to see him a couple times. I was lamenting I never got to see him live. So
I've anybody that knows me knows that Chris Cornell, I've always said, has hands down been my favorite musician. Between Soundgarden and Audioslave, I fell in love with the guy. Mm. His voice would give me chills when he hit certain notes. And I have spent literally thousands upon thousands of hours over my life listening to his music. And I'm not going to lie, when I woke up the morning after he killed himself, I had numerous text messages. One of them, my friends were the ones that broke the news to me, and I teared up pretty good. I've been open and honest about this in my life, and you know, it's not easy. It hasn't always been an easy thing for me to talk about, because for a lot of times I was ashamed or I was embarrassed about it. But I've dealt with depression and anxiety my whole life, and it is not an easy thing to go through. And when you look at someone like Chris Cornell, who seemed to have it all, who was at the top of his profession, who was a multimillionaire, who had a beautiful wife and two lovely daughters, and he battled it. He dealt with it. So if someone like him deals with it, it can happen to anybody, man.
Right.
You know, so it's for me, this is just something that hits close to home, because he was my favorite musician, and because he battled something that you know, I still do battle with daily. And so this really was one of the things that, you know, I Look, man, this would be like Tom Brady dying.
Yeah.
To me. You know, you know how much I love the Patriots.
Absolutely,
and,
yeah.
You know, like,
it's someone you looked up to for so many years and was so impactful on your life, and then all of a sudden you find out it wasn't because he had old age or he was stricken with cancer. He had died because he was dealing with something that couldn't be seen. And it was just really unfortunate. And you look at the genre of music, man, so many greats throughout the grunge era are now gone. Lane Staley, Kurt Cobain, Chris Cornell, Scott Weiland. Basically, it's Eddie Vedder. I was actually watching today a video of Howard Stern talking with Perry Farrell of Jane's Addiction, and he was talking about his heroin use and everything like that, and you're like, how does this guy still survive, and how do these guys deal with all this drug use? And it's just their coping mechanism, and to have such great art, sometimes you have to deal with all these demons.
You know, I got to see Chris Cornell perform three times. The first time was hands down. Well, no, actually, the first time was when I worked for Jimmy Kimmel.
Right.
I worked for the production company.
It's probably what, a song or two too.
No, he did like six or seven.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
though.
So they had their stage in the back, and I was there with a date of mine, and we had like VIP access, so I got to see him from a really cool venue after the Jimmy Kimmel show, which was just so cool. That was the first time I ever got to see him, and that was right when Soundgarden was getting back together.
Right.
So I was just like, wow, this is amazing, because I never got to see them before, because they broke up, and then they got back together shortly after I moved to Los Angeles. And then the next time that I saw them was, hands down, for me, the coolest, because you know, I signed up for their fan page and everything on Facebook and on their website and all that stuff. And I got this email once saying that if you can make it down to Amoeba Records by the end of the day, there's two tickets waiting for you if you show your ID that prove that it's you, that you're on this this list of their top fans or whatever.
Right.
You get free tickets to see him do a private show, which I took my best friend Mac, who is no longer here. He's passed away. Rest in peace, buddy. And we saw him at Paramount Studios at CBGB,
right.
That studio right there. And I was in the third row, man, and there couldn't have been more than like 500 people that were there.
Oh.
And they performed for an hour. And it was one of the highlights of my time out there. I'll never forget it. And then the last time I saw him at the Great Western Forum, and that was just an absolute, unbelievable experience. So, again, rest in peace to Chris Cornell. I'm deeply, deeply saddened about this news.
Yeah, it's extremely sad, just because he was still had so much to give to this world. But again, he was dealing with a lot of stuff that I know a lot of people deal with, even in the MMA circles, football. We've talked about that. There's that CTE stuff that can also bring on depression and just people getting really down. So again, if you ever need help, there are hotlines to call. There are ways to get out, reach out to people. It's always the better route to have someone there for your help. But again, we honor the great Chris Cornell here today as the first time we've been on since. So, it's something that's impacted both of us, and hopefully we don't see any more of these deaths here in the future.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because you know how bad I would be if Slash died? He is my... Chris Cornell was up there, probably top 10 for musicians for me, but Slash is like the end-all be-all.
Yeah.
I got to see him here in the Bangor waterfront one time a couple of years ago. One of the happiest moments I've ever had to see that musician live. And now Guns N' Roses is coming to Boston at the TD Garden, and I'm like, oh, it's a Sunday? Yeah, maybe I could... maybe. So we'll see. Probably won't go and do that one, but...
I'd love to see some GNR. Let me know.
Yeah. It's coming October, I think, 12th? Don't quote me on that one, but that's what's coming up on the agenda. But we've had a good show today. We don't want to end it on a somber note, but a lot of things going on. As we talked about in the intro, the UFC world is evolving. There's some big things still ahead. By the time we talk to you next week, we might be talking about a whole other matchups that might have been coming to the horizon. Who knows? Maybe McGregor-Mayweather is actually a legit fight. Maybe we'll be able to talk about the date and if that'll be impactful. And we're also getting closer to June. And you know what's happening at the end of June, Ryan?
What's that?
Well, we got two main fighters.
Oh, that's
grappling.
Right. How could I forget?
We had Devin back on the last show, which was exciting. He had talked about his matchup with Horcher, and then we have Tim Boach trying to continue his UFC career, and I'm looking forward to that one. So we'll keep talking about that as we get a little closer to it, too.
Yeah, a lot of great fights to be had, so don't sleep. Make sure you're paying attention to the main event for all your MMA news. This is where you got to come to get it, because we're bringing it week in and week out, Brian.
All right. Usually we would play our normal song here, but in honor of Chris Cornell, I'm going to switch it up just a little bit here just to play us out. We'll do a couple seconds of this great classic I think this will be apt. Be apropos.
Yeah, and this is good for fighters, too, because they go hungry a lot during weight cuts. So
I like it.
Yeah. Thank you to Matt Bissett. Thank you to Zach Otto. You guys are great. Look forward to the next time you come on.
Main event. We'll see you next time. But I can't feed on the powerless when my cup's already overfilled. Yeah. But it's on the table.